I just found out I'm listening to Fresh Air Community Radio.
That's KFAI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and online at kfai.org.
And you're listening too.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at kfai.org. Non-commercial and community-powered radio. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota and listeners like you. Chi Miigwech. Bonjour, relatives across our great Turtle Island and beyond. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, your host for the next hour on Medicine Bundle, the show celebrating Indigenous people and our allies as we creatively embrace our gifts of healing and connection. What's in your medicine bundle?
Time just at me and say it with your chest. Last time I saw you, you couldn't say less. You playing checkers, but I'm playing chess. Well, you act on my ex, got a lot to address. How am I pretending resi when I'm booked on the rest? How am I pretending and blood condoms in the red? Got a tribal ID if you wanna act like the feds. Supposed to be a gorilla, so let me show you what that is.
Welcome to Medicine Bundle. Happy Friday. This is your hostess, Deanna Standing Cloud, and I'm just getting over a cold, so you'll hear my voice a little some way, and I took all the proper precautions, just hacking all over the studio right now. So, but it's the season to get these kind of things, and both of my kids are in school, and so we're just sharing germs, and that's love, and that's family. I'm really excited for our conversation today, this week. I have a old pal, my friend, here in the studio with me, and we're going to just chat about our work and maybe reminisce on some stuff. And she's a creative storyteller, an Indigenous historian, and performing artist, as well as a community connector with the arts in Minneapolis here, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And she makes bags and very creative. And are you a weaver, beater?
Weaver.
Weaver, nice, nice. So I'm going to let her introduce herself, and I'll just stop breathing all over this mic for 2 seconds.
Get my coughing out of the way. Ho ukimakwa netishus. I'm Miss Squawky from Tama, Iowa. I have been living and creating on Dakota territory for almost 10 years now, and it has been an absolute pleasure to be here. And I think I've met you about 10 years ago when I first arrived. The first year I was here is when we met. So it's our 10-year anniversary.
Oh, wow. A whole decade. It doesn't feel like that. So what brought you to Minnesota? Like, you are from Iowa.
Yes, I'm from Tama, Iowa, but I am also a world traveler. I left home at the tender age of 18 and went down to Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas, where I got my bachelor's in American Indian Studies with an emphasis in theater. And that's really what started my journey as a theater artist. But I also grew up going to powwows, so I could I've been dancing since I could walk. And when my sister became powwow princess for our Meskwaki annual powwow, we started traveling all over the Midwest. And in my family and our community, we would do these powwow dance presentations all over Iowa, mostly for schools that were predominantly white. And we would just sort of educate them on powwow culture, on Meskwaki culture. And we've been doing that since about fourth grade.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you've been performing since, I mean, how old are you in the fourth grade?
I don't even know.
Like, how eight?
Yeah. And I remember being like a little tiny tot at the powwow, and there'd always be these, you know, white people coming and like asking to take our picture. We're like published in books and all of these things. And so we've just kind of been like in that space of educating white people about in Native culture, Meskwaki culture. And so I really made a point in studying history since I was a kid, because I knew that public education, like we went to public school in town, and, you know, just like the American education system doesn't really teach Native history the way that we know it. And so I took it upon myself to educate myself. And every time there was a school project, I would be talking to my uncle, who is the tribal historian, about a specific topic. He would give me all the information. I would write my paper, give my presentations. And then so it wasn't really a far stretch to go get my bachelor's in American Indian Studies. And so it's been super helpful for me to have that history. And I've found myself educating people. Just I went on a cruise and I was educating people. I'm sitting on an airplane next to somebody, I'm educating people. And I've met people who thought that we were extinct. And so it's been exhausting, but also kind of fulfilling in a way, because then educating people who are not Native opens their eyes to our struggles, and it actually creates allies. Mm-hmm. So then they begin speaking up about Native issues and bringing awareness to their networks.
Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, this week, since it's Friday today, my daughter had the orange shirt, mm-hmm. and we also had a button from Indian Ed. It said Orange Shirt Day. And so I don't know if there's any other, and her whole school is just kindergarteners. So she went to school and she had her button on. And I guess her teacher did not know anything about that. So she explained I was like, how did you explain it to her? And she's five. She said, you know, I said that the white people took Ojibwe kids, and they tried to make them white, and they were very mean. And then, so the teacher had no idea about that. So she looked it up, and she responded back to me via, you know, like we have a system, and she started to learn about it. So just like those little things, just like those specific events and things like that can be a catalyst for educating educators.
Yes, yes.
So even little things like that. So that's really good to elevate the consciousness of the public, because it's not an easy task to educate white people, because they have questions, and often the questions are kind of ridiculous and you're like, oh my gosh, but just have to move forward with explaining them.
I know. When so me and my sister, I have a twin sister, Delanda, and like about 10 years ago, we joined this like travel club, and we traveled to different places around the country and to other countries. And we would take my nephew, and he was just a little guy at the time, but we would take him to museums and like science museums and all these other places. And so when he would come back to school, like he was in second grade by this time, and he would know about everything that the teacher was talking about. And she would say that he knew more than some things. And I just thought that was so cool. Like, I think it's important to educate our young ones, you know, early. Mm-hmm. And that's why I also like having conversations with the little people, because they just really know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Especially these days. I'm like, I don't think I was that smart when I so what area of work did your nephew venture off into?
He's a big gamer, so he, like other young men these days. He loves his video games, but he's also very artistic. He's always done drawings. He does some animation. He has dreams of having a clothing line. He's just, he's a very cool dude.
Mm-hmm. Very well-rounded.
Yeah.
Probably can hold a good conversation.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm just curious as to, like, when kids are exposed to all these different things, like, how it affects them as they get older. And just thinking about my childhood, and you said that you were traveling a lot. And I think the first time I even went on a plane, I was a little bit older, so I was, like, 14. So, but just those, that one trip, like, shifted my whole paradigm. Like, my whole mind opened up, and I just was exposed to, we went to Arizona, so we went to the a Pueblo down there, and it was exciting for me because I never left Minneapolis, South Minneapolis. So I just want to encourage all the Native parents who are listening to just, in whatever way you can, to get your kids to expose, and not buying things, but buying experiences so that they can learn.
Creating
more.
Those memories. And it really opens up their worldview, and they have a better idea that, you know, anything is possible. And that, and what we tell our young people back home is that home will always be here. Home will always be there. And it's okay to go out and explore and and meet new people and try new things. And I have noticed in the young people today who are, you know, getting the courage to go out and travel and have these adventures. And I'm seeing their posts on social media and just their reactions of, like, just the amazing feeling that they get being out in the world. And I remember having those feelings. And so I'm always encouraging young people to go out on an adventure.
I was just thinking about, and it, like, you make your adventures look so fun. I'm like, man, and you had this cool hat. I think you were, like, hiking, and I was thinking about that, and I get all, like, FOMO with it. I'm like, man, that looks fun. Especially that hat.
Yeah, and a lot of my adventures I've gone on alone because I realize that if I sit around and wait for somebody else to do something with me, I'm going to miss out. Yeah. I'm not going to get to do the thing. So, I like, now I have enough courage and just fortitude to just be like, oh, I want to go do this, and so I'm going to go and do it.
That's awesome. What's your favorite solo adventure you've had so far?
Always Alaska.
Oh my God.
I love Alaska. I've been to different parts of Alaska. The first time I went to Alaska was in 2011, and I was working at a sporting goods store in Haines, and I lived in a tent for like 3 months while I worked at this sporting goods store. By day I was a cashier, and by night I was, you know, hiking the mountains, and the sun wasn't setting until like 1 or 2, and then it'd start coming back up around 3:30, so you could have long night hikes.
Oh my gosh. Did you come across any wildlife or bears? Or
Well, there's like an eagle refuge. So there's eagles all the time. And you would see them in the bay where the cruise ships docked. And they would just circle. And they were just gliding in the wind, you know, for fun. They weren't even hunting. They were just there gliding around. There was ravens. There was crows. And you have to be nice to the ravens or the crows because they're so smart. They remember you like for generations. They will tell everybody if you are mean to them, and they will be mean to you. So I always fed the crows. I always acknowledged the crows. And then I saw orca pods swim by. I saw sea lions. And people tell me this is impossible, but I know I saw it. There was like a giant turtle or a tortoise, I can't really tell, but it was massive because I would sink to the water while I was there, because Haines is surrounded by two ocean inlets, and so I would always go and sing the water song and some other like native songs, and I would sing them in the same order so that they knew it was me. And then whenever I saw the orcas, I would run out there and start singing, and then they would start like spouting and crashing up and like just sort of making themselves known. And the sea life, like the animals that would be swim, like the sea otters and that giant turtle, they came up and looked at me while I was singing, and then as soon as I was done, they like swam away. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like a Disney princess. I'm actually a Disney princess.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's been, and then I would have, and I'm Bear Clan, so I've had some experiences where I really felt my bear spirit protecting me, mm-hmm. because they're in the mountains, there's black bears and there's brown bears in Alaska. And so they come into town, and so it's a little scary because you're like sleeping in a tent.
Right?
Yeah. But the secret is peeing around your tent.
So really?
you're marking your territory.
Shut it. Yeah. For all those who are scared of wildlife, make sure to pee. I have no problem with that.
Mark
I have
to your go to territory.
To go to the bathroom all the time. Oh my God. That turtle. There's a song. It was taught to me by Donna Lushpell. And she's from White Earth. But there's a song, a turtle song, and they describe grandma turtle going all around the universe, like and collecting the things that, like the medicine that you need, and bringing it back. So that's what I thought of when you talked about your turtle.
That's yeah. Amazing. Before I even went to Alaska, I would spend some time in South Dakota with Braveheart Society when they did their Snuffy ceremony, and Mary Louise Defender had like these bone dice, and she would kind of give readings for mm-hmm. us. And like my reading was that I was like a turtle, like home is wherever I am. Wow. And I just thought that was so cool.
That's amazing. I was just thinking about that's crazy, because I just heard that same exact thing. I was listening to the part two Bedote, I think it's on TPT. They're talking about like the birthing places, and they're talking about the turtle. And I mean, we've heard when you hear the same like teachings, you know them, but then when you hear them again, it's like, oh, it just means something new when you're like older. I don't know if that makes sense, but like the same Nana Buju stories. I said his name. Every winter means something new every winter, even though it's the same story. That makes sense.
Yeah, you always find something new when mm-hmm. Because we're in a different place,
right.
You know, growing emotionally and mentally and spiritually.
Yeah, I love that. I'm not going to cry. I'm not. Well, Oogie, you are such a talented actor. I'm not going to say actress because that reminds me of like the Hollywood people, but you're an actor. Talented actor. What made you go to school to pursue that as a profession?
Well, I always wanted to be an actor. I knew I wanted to be an actor when I saw Mr. Bean on HBO. I love to tell this story. Rowan Atkinson, shout out. He's the reason I'm an actor. But I was just fascinated by this character who could tell an entire story without saying a word. And that was just fascinating to me. But in high school, there was a theater club, but it was all white kids. And so then back then, you know, 80s and 90s, we didn't really have any representation on the media. You know, mm-hmm. all the Indians were played by Italians, or they were like 1800s Indians. And I was like, that's not what I want to do. And so I didn't really know that it was for me. And then when I got to Haskell, that's when I found out that they had the Thunderbird Theater, which was the student club at Haskell. And it had been around for 30 years by the time I arrived, and they were doing Native theater. And so, of course, I took my first like theater 101 class. And Pat Melody, I remember she, like one of the first things she said on that first day of class was that our ancestors are storytellers. They've been storytellers since time immemorial. You know, they sat around a fire and they were telling stories. And so from then on, I realized that theater is for us. It's just the next step in our journey as storytellers. And so I was in every theater class after that. I was in every production after that, and just learning how to be an actor. Because I learned that theater is the actor's medium. Mm-hmm. Television is the producer's medium, mm-hmm. and film is the director's medium. And then I would say commercials are the client's medium. I've learned. Yeah. But so I, and while we were at Haskell, we learned about classic plays, and I've done Shakespeare and like Glass Menagerie, but whenever we performed, we would do native written plays. So, and then we did indigenized Shakespeare. So my first experience with indigenized Shakespeare was at Haskell. And we didn't change anything, but it was like two, like we did Romeo and Juliet, and it was like two warring tribes. And there was like powwow dancing and drums and all that kind of stuff. And then when I eventually went to Alaska several other times, I did Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater Company's Lir Hekwi, which was Alaskanized and indigenized, and some of the words were translated into Athabaskan Gwich'in. And then we also did Midsummer Night's Dream, and I played Puck. And so it was just like really cool that we could evolve theater to bring us into the storytelling. And so I just began, I was like, this is it. This is the rest of my life. And there was never no plan B. I've just been doing theater. And then I got my master's in theater design and technology, where I studied set design and lighting design, because I knew that I was going to work with native theater companies, that there would be, they would be smaller organizations. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be more useful than just an actor. I mm-hmm. wanted to be more helpful, because I had an elder when I graduated high school. He came to my graduation party and he said, you know, go out and learn everything you can and bring it back to help the people. And so I feel like this dancing has always been my medicine, but storytelling, theater has been like the thing that really drives me, because there's so much power in storytelling and it adds to the representation of us. Mm-hmm. And I have always been intent upon breaking the stereotypes that I've seen in media of who Native people are. Like, I want to bring us into the present, mm-hmm. to the present moment. We still exist today and we have a say in the future that mm-hmm. this world is going into.
Yeah, because we'll be here.
Yeah,
for a long time.
I strongly believe that Indigenous knowledge will save the world if people mm-hmm. would just listen to us.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. So Oogie and I were both at Standing Rock the same day. You were probably there a couple. I think we slept there one or two nights. But these Haudenosaunee women must have came to, it was just a reading. Like we did a reading of, I think, I forgot what it was.
I can't remember the play, but we did Sneaky. We did that play. We performed Sneaky, and I stepped in 3 days before. So I had the script in my hand. And we performed that. And then there was a reading, but I don't remember what it was.
It was, oh God, I was helping. I forgot what it was, but some Haudenosaunee women, when we were leaving, were like waving at everybody, like we knew each other, like, because it's like when you were there, it was almost like you knew everyone and everyone was your relative. So when you're leaving or whatever, it's like a parade and like, oh, we'll see you, Gigawab women. But these Haudenosaunee women said she had a dream of this is how we're going to in the future do our storytelling, or she had some kind of dream about like theater, and I'm like, that always stuck with me. And I think that's the one takeaway that I took from there. One of them, there's many, many, it was a very powerful experience, but so I think about that too, because it's such a, and like when I grew up, it was like, we were Indianish and we're so, I was bashful all the time. So that's why I'm doing this now, because I just started talking in front of people. And it seems like you've been doing it quite a while, but have you probably, of course, have had family members where they're like kind of scared, you know, like they're so, what they have to say is really important, but it's just, they can't get it out because they're kind of like shy. And mm-hmm. I think that's a human thing, but there's like a cultural, I don't know what I'm saying. I think the mucinex is hitting. Yeah. But I don't know what I'm saying. But you're just amazing and outstanding and very incredible because you are not shy.
I used to be. I used to
hate giving
public presentations like outside of school. And I would always get so nervous, and I still get nervous, like when I'm going on stage or if I'm about to speak in front of a group of people, I get nervous, but that just reminds me that I'm human. Mm-hmm. and it's like, you know, as an actor, you're trained to channel that energy and to use it on stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I've seen you do a lot of emotional work. Where do you go in that moment? Like, I think you and I even done like emotional stuff on stage where, and then I've cried on stage, but I'm like thinking about something sad. But how do you work through that? I know it's a little, because sometimes it's like you're working through some trauma in front of a whole audience.
Yeah.
Which is amazing too.
You know what? When I first started doing theater and we would touch on these topics, and
it was before I
started therapy, and so mm-hmm. I was like, oh my god, this is so amazing, like I can work through my issues on stage and it's like not me and I got people listening to me, and that's pretty cool, this feels good. So it was actually a great outlet for me emotionally. And then once I like started doing therapy, I was able to find like just different tools to process my trauma. And then as my career progressed and I was still doing like drama with really hard pressing issues, sometimes it's really difficult to pull myself out of that, because, you know, just as a Meskwaki, as a Native person, I have had a lot of tragic things happen to me, to my family, to my friends, and sometimes like talking about those things, having to say those things over and over and over again, can really weigh on me emotionally and spiritually. And so I always have to like go home and like pet my cat and smudge, and sort of like I like to write letters or like make some art or something just to like process, to get that out of my body. Mm-hmm. Because it's just something that needs to be transmuted into something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very important to take care of yourself, especially when you're a storyteller, because when you're a storyteller, you're kind of like a cultural keeper, like a living legacy of our culture. So, and that's a big responsibility. So I can imagine you having to like take a cedar bath or, you know, just sleep an extra couple hours, or, you know, I had to do that this past weekend. Been going and going, and my kids really wanted to go to the North Shore, and I was sick the whole time, but I was like, let's go fly, and we're late for this wedding, and let's go take pictures. And so this past couple days I tried to, you know, take care of myself, and it's important as like Native women who are holding the entire community together to take care of ourselves. So I love that you do that and you're aware of it, because not all of us do that. Like, we just keep going and going and giving and giving, and our families and communities will be fine with taking and taking and if you don't say anything, because if you don't say anything, they'll just think everything's okay to keep going. So that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
And I've also been like, just within the past few years, I think, you know, post-pandemic, post-COVID, I've been a lot more conscious of the work that I do take on. Like, I can't do what I call the trauma porn anymore. I can't do the things that are only the tragic stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I need something that is healing to me and to the audience, and that makes people laugh, that makes people feel good, because I think there's enough going on in the world that I think we need that break from mm-hmm. what is happening, just to reset our nervous system. And so I've been more conscious of, I'm still educating people, but I'm doing it in a way that lifts up the culture and lifts people up.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Because it's like the old thing, like the deficit model. And, you know, like I know that a lot of horrible things are happening. And I acknowledge that. But I don't like, I don't try to, you know, I don't let it steer my, I try not to let it steer my emotions. It's really hard, especially now. And just kind of the person that I'm becoming and like not controlling my emotions, but not letting it get away with me and like not getting anxiety so much. And, what is it? Doom scrolling. And because you can go down a rabbit hole and very well freak
yourself.
And the
algorithm is there to make sure you stay in that rabbit hole.
That algorithm. We got to give some food or some assignment to that damn algorithm, Monty Doo, because they need to chill out. For real. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Oogie's current work and some cool happenings, or if there's any, I heard there's some stuff going on. There's some projects that she's working on. And some where you can find her and where you can engage with her. We'll be right back.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting an evening with Go-Go Penguin at the Fine Line, Tuesday, October 7th. The Manchester Trio, Chris Ellingsworth on piano, Nick Blacka on bass, and John Scott on drums, return with their new album, Necessary Fictions, displaying Go-Go Penguin's signature brand of acoustic electronica. More information about an evening with Go-Go Penguin at the Fine Line is available at first-avenue.com.
Bonjour, we're back. You're listening to Medicine Bundle. This is Deanna Standing Cloud, and I'm here with my guest, Oogie Pushatanikwa. Did I say that right?
Yes.
I was trying to spell it the other day, and I'm like...
It's phonetic.
Yeah, Pushatanikwa. That's such a cool last name. Is it a Meskwaki last name?
It doesn't mean anything because when the BIA agent came to do the census in like the early 1900s, I don't remember if that was like 1910 or whatever, but Meskwakis didn't have a last name. We didn't have last names back then, and we just had our Meskwaki name. And so when he came and was doing the census, he took our great-great-grandfather's nickname, Pushatanikwa, as his children's last name. And then, of course, he spelled it wrong phonetically because there's not even a P in the Meskwaki language. We're Pushatanikwa. Pushatanikwa derived from Pushatanikwa, which was his nickname because he had a lazy eye.
Oh.
It's like wise eye or whatever.
Cool. Isn't that crazy how the roles and everything were created? So a village in Red Lake, it's called Panema, and it's actually named, it came from like the census time, like, I don't know when, like the 40s, 50s, but the elders, they would approach the elders and they're like trying to get them to like do the census, and they're like, they say Panema, which is like later. Yeah, let's get to it later. So all of a sudden it's like Panema. Like, didn't want to be mean, like, see you later. So that's why it's called Panema.
Oh my gosh. And that's the life in America.
Yeah. That's a metaphor, eh? But there's cool little stories, so it's really cool to hear about. Very cool. And your name, so Meskwakis and Anishinaabe, we have the same base language, so we're mm-hmm. Algonquin. So I know that Oogie means, we would say Ogimakwe.
Yeah, it's Ukimakwa in Meskwaki.
Nice. And that means?
Chief lady.
Boss lady.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So instead of calling me chief, you know, they would say Ukima, but I just go by Oogie.
Yeah.
And so all Meskwakis have three names. We have our Meskwaki name, we have the nickname derived from our Meskwaki name, and then we have our English name, which I call our tax-paying name.
Yeah. In all caps. No. My government name. Cool. So you came to Minneapolis a decade ago. We should have a 10-year party.
Yeah, we should.
And you... Were you just kind of attracted to like the Native theater community here?
Actually, it was, I'm here because of Marcy Rendon. Marcy Rendon is the one that talked me into moving to the Twin Cities. She came to Haskell, I think it was in 2003, and she was a director in residence with Thunderbird Theater, and she helped us write, you know, a short piece that we performed that semester, and then we kept in contact. And then 10 years before I even came, she would say, you need to move to the Twin Cities. There's so much theater. There's Native theater too. You gotta move up here. So like for 10 years, I was like, I don't want to live in a city. I'm like a country girl. I don't want to live in a city. And then finally she was like, there's this theater company that needs a Native actor. You should audition. You can stay at my house. So I auditioned and I got it, and it was Theater Unbound, Title IX, and we performed at Intermedia Arts. Rest in peace, Intermedia Arts.
And on Lindale.
Yeah. And then after that show was done, I had to go back to Iowa because I was working on my tribe's organic farm, Red Earth Gardens, and I had to finish out the season. And then I was like, you know, Minneapolis is pretty cool. And so January 2016 I came right back after farm season was over, stayed in Marcy's basement, and then for a few months, and I was like, okay, I think I'm going to stay here. And I found some roommates and just been here ever since.
Cool.
Minus the pandemic. I went home because I thought it was, you know, the end of the world. And it was like, these people are crazy. Yeah. All the toilet paper's gone.
All the toilet paper's gone. What is wrong with these people? For real. God. Every time I look at a big old thing of toilet paper, I get like trauma. I'm like, what the heck? Or like Costco.
I still buy large things of toilet paper to make sure I have some.
I'm like hoarding toilet paper, and they're not even in the package anymore. I like have a whole like shelf of them. We have trauma, man. For real. Okay, let's not have trauma together. So, in the paper towels.
Too. Yeah, yeah, paper towels. So I moved here, and then I auditioned maybe like for 4 different things, and then just working with different theater companies, people started to get to know me and know my work, and so I didn't really have to audition. Mm-hmm. I'm, as Moira Rose says on Schitt's Creek, I'm what they call offer only.
Hey, don't even bother with an audition.
I have had to audition a few times, but a lot of things, it's I get a text or an email or a phone call like, hey, are you available to do this thing? And if I'm available, yeah, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. I'm always happy to, you know, do something because, you know, the artist lifestyle is always trying to get to that next gig.
Yeah. And well, when I seen you perform, well, I was an actor in the film festival.
10 minute play festival.
Yes. And when I saw you, I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, why would I be here with her? It was just electric. And I'm like, oh, she's super talented. And I felt like so much emotion when I saw you perform. And it was just, I'm like, she's amazing.
That was Limekin, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even like the most emotional I've seen you in a performance either. And I was all blown away. Like, I can't work like this. I think you should find somebody else because I'm up here. But it was amazing. So, and I'm really happy that you stayed because this, our community, I feel like has grown a lot, since you've been here because you bring that, the rawness and the realness of like Native experience in your plays. So me quench to the theater money dues. Eh?
Yeah, it's pretty, as an actor, even just as a person, I've always been really emotional. So doing emotional things on stage is kind of easy for me. And even just like sometimes just saying the lines of, you know, whatever this character is going through, it's easy enough to make me cry. Yeah. Like if I see somebody crying, I'm crying. Even if I'm not sad or nothing.
Just put it over the edge.
Yeah. But it's been... it's been really great. And also just like also being a trained actor, like I think it's important, like if anybody is interested in acting, I suggest going into theater, taking some acting classes. And, you know, as Native people, we learn by doing. So I think it's important to just like get out and do it, because that's how you're going to learn.
Yeah. And it keeps our minds strong, because storytellers, you know, back in the day, and since time immemorial, did I say that right? Mm-hmm. Time immemorial, remembered the stories. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like it was written down and we could like grab our phones and, oh, what is this part? We had to like remember. So it keeps our brains strong. So remembering those lines, remembering all blocking. The space. Yeah, the blocking. That's what it's called. The space. I'm like, the things over there on the table or whatever. It keeps your mind strong. So it's a good way to keep your body healthy and your mind strong. And also, you're not in front of a screen and you're using your voice and you're using like the gifts that you were given as a human to like project and perform. So it's really, it's powerful in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Wash day. Wash day. So your current work, what do you do currently for your work? Because I want to hear more about
that's
what's going on.
Such a huge question.
It's a loaded question.
It's so funny. Anytime somebody says, oh, just let us know what you got coming up. And like half an hour later, I'm still talking. So I am currently the Native Artist in Residence with the Minnesota Historical Society.
Oh, cool.
And I was researching fiber bags, twine bags, because I'm a Meskwaki bag weaver. I learned how to weave 11 years ago. And before I took that class, no Meskwaki had been making these bags since the 1940s. And so there was two of us from that class that continued to learn, and then the other woman had a stroke, and so then I was the only one who was like actively making bags. And it was in that moment that I was like, oh, I really need to like get like this knowledge out there. I need to preserve it and I need to teach people. And so I applied for this residency with MNHS and I got it. And I was able to go through their archives and look at bags. And then I was at the Chicago Field Museum. I went to Mille Lacs. I went to my tribe's museum, and just talking about the history of bags, and making a documentary about that. So that's one documentary that I'm working on. It doesn't have a title yet. I still have interviews to do. And then I'm also been working on a documentary called Why We Dance with OSP Productions and some folks at Public Functionary. And yeah, we've been working on this for like 4 years now. And I just was getting a text message and we're having an editing session next week. And then we want to get this out to film festivals. It started as a promo spot for my cousin for doing powwow presentations. And then it ended up being a whole documentary.
Cool.
And then I'm also, in 2003, this black and white film came out called Coffee and Cigarettes, which I saw in Lawrence at Liberty Hall. And I'm just like obsessed with this movie. It's just vignettes of people drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes and having conversations. And so I always wanted to do an Indian version of it. And so last year I was like, oh, coffee and fry bread. And so I started shooting this black and white version for myself of Coffee and Fry Bread. And it's just about me learning how to make fry bread, because I don't know how to make fry bread. And it was just something that I refused to do because of, you know, it was like colonization and it causes diabetes and it's not healthy. But it's also like a very cultural food for us. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to make this movie and I'm going to learn how to make Meskwaki fry bread. And so I still need to get home and record Meskwaki fry bread makers. So I'm working on that. And then I am also wanting to do one on the history of our powwow, because we just had our 109th annual Meskwaki powwow. And as you know, our ceremonies and our culture were banned for 100 years, and the American Indian Religious Freedom Act wasn't passed until 1978. And so I'm just fascinated by the fact that we were still able to do our dances for over 100 years while it was banned by the government. And in Why We Dance, there's a little snippet where I show the no dancing letter that was sent by the government. It was like, no dancing allowed. And so we threw like the largest powwow ever, like to date back then. It was like in the 1920s, and it was basically like the Meskwaki State Fair.
Wow.
So that was, yeah, I just love that. And so I want to make a short documentary about the history of the powwow. And that's actually how we started charging at the gate for like the white people to come and witness our dancing. And with that money that they collected at the gate, that's how we bought our land back. So we bought our first 80 acres of land back in 1857. And about every 2 years since then, we've been buying more and more acreage. And now I think we have over 10,000 acres.
Oh, that's
And that's
amazing.
Tribal Meskwaki land.
That's awesome. That's like a case study in land back. Mm-hmm. Or like an example that we should lift up, because I remember you telling me about that, but it just seems such a simple mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a lot of factors. It was the settlers of Iowa who petitioned for us. It was the governor passing a law that allowed us to stay within the bounds of Iowa. And then it was the people deciding, you know, which land was best for us to be able to live and exist as Meskwaki. So we had to have all the natural resources that we normally use.
Mm-hmm.
And so I carry that with me wherever I go, even though I haven't been home, you know, living for a while, like out in the world, I'm still Meskwaki, and I still have that forethought that my ancestors had for us, because they wanted us to live as Meskwaki. They wanted us to live in peace. And so I, even though like I'm not perfect, I'm not a saint, but I'm doing my best to like honor my ancestors' wishes that we live in peace. So I'm mm-hmm. always looking for ways to cultivate that peace.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's so cool. And those are just a couple things that Uzi has going on.
I mean, I have a book that I've been trying to finish forever. It's like an actor 101 book, because I've done a lot of community theater working with community members who aren't actors, and they don't have like the things that I think are common sense, like mm-hmm. how to memorize lines, you know, what the blocking is and stage directions and all that stuff. So like I've been working on this manual for a while now that I just need to finish. And then I'm also working at the Walker Art Center as the Indigenous Initiative Specialist, because Deani Whitehawk's Love Language exhibition is opening October 18th. Well, there's October 17th, but October 18th, there's going to be an opening day panel, and like the exhibits are going to be open, and it's in galleries 1, 2, and 3, and it's a 15-year review of Deani's work, and it's massive. This is the first time that all of Deani's work is going to be in one place. And so we're really excited about it. And we actually got some community programs that we have coming up that I really want people to come to. So there's the opening day panel that's October 18th, which is a Saturday, and that starts at 1:00. And then there's going to be an overflow room, and we're going to live stream it. So if you can't get to the Walker, it will be live streamed, and then it'll live on the YouTube. So even if you don't get the live stream, you can watch it later on YouTube. And then Free Thursday night, October 23rd, there's going to be Scholars Night, which will be another panel of Indigenous scholars. And we want to have like a networking opportunity for university students. And then there's the Free First Saturday, November 3rd. And there's just going to be all kinds of things happening that day. And then we'll have an artist one-on-one where they'll just lead conversations on selected works in the gallery. And so that's November 20th. And then we'll also have some bus tours that will be coming from powwow grounds on Franklin. So Native folks, BIPOC folks can sign up or just show up on the buses, and then they'll be bused to the Walker, and then there'll be a Native tour guide who will take them through the exhibition. So that's Thursday, November 20th, Saturday, December 13th, Thursday, January 29th of next year, and then Thursday, February 5th. And you can find this. We have posters up around town.
So there's more than one opportunity to take the bus.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So there's four opportunities to take the bus, and then that way you don't have to worry about parking. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have a tour guide that takes you through Diani's exhibition. And then it's going to be so cool. There's like in the lobby, there's blankets and pillows that Diani designed.
Shut
yes. It. With Ferrybolt, the wool company. Yeah. And so those will be on the couches, and there's going to be, you know, space where, like, reflection space where people can sit down and have a conversation and talk about the art. And yeah, it's so amazing. There's going to be so much. Like, I hope people come, especially Native people, I hope, despite the history mm-hmm. with the walker, you know, there's people that work there now who are really trying to correct what went wrong in 2017, you know. And so Diani decided a few years ago to have her work shown here, and that was like a big, you know, that's a big risk for her, but it's also it's just like the space to showcase the things that she's been doing for the past 15 years. And it's not just her work. She works in community. She mm-hmm. has, you know, she's had up to 30 bead workers in her studio to help create these pieces. And so it's going to be really amazing.
Oh, she's so talented. And she, like, just her, I feel like the cultural and the kindness that she carries too is always there. She's always been so, she reminds me of her mom mm-hmm. a lot, just nurturing and always just thoughtful, and she has beautiful daughters, and I just really admire her as not only, you know, an artist, but just as a person and as a sister, kind of. So
yeah,
Chewy.
Oh, and I don't know if you all know, but Native folks get in for free at the Walker every day, not just Thursdays and the free first Saturdays. So the Walker's open from Wednesday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And you can just go to the front desk and be like, hey, I'm Native. They'll let you in.
So you don't have to show a tribal ID or anything?
Mm-mm.
Nice.
No.
It's just self-identified?
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. But everybody who's not Native, don't try it.
Yeah. Just come on Thursdays. It's free.
Just, yeah. For those who are not Native who think that they want to be Native, Thursday is your day. We have a problem. And it's okay. But it's not okay. Let's not. what am I saying? That's amazing. So we have all those events. Is there anything else that you're working on? I mean, that's a lot.
That is so much. No, I don't know if I want to spill the beans on this because it's not even written yet. But, I'm really interested in the history of the Vikings coming to this country. You know, there's evidence of Vikings. And I met a guy from Oklahoma who said that there are Viking artifacts that are in Oklahoma. So they're like, how did they travel here? Was it trade? Like the Native people, you know, who on the East Coast who might have traveled inward to the Midwest. Like, I'm just interested in this, like, how we connected, how we crossed paths with the Vikings, because I think we would have been on the East Coast around that time. Mm-hmm. You know, we were up in that area. And I just find it fascinating. And I kind of want to do like a fictional movie about that. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of fascinated by it. And so I've found someone locally who is a Viking expert, and we still have to have coffee, but I want to have conversation with him. And I've just been doing my own research, reading up on Viking culture. And so I'm just kind of trying to do a deep dive on that, because I'd love to explore that, because we're kind of, our people are kind of similar. And mm-hmm. the more I learn about Vikings pre-Christianity, it's really fascinating.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny because everything you brought up in the show, it's like stuff has popped up in this past week about Vikings too. So it's so strange, and not strange, but it's like synchronicity. But yeah, because I was telling my daughter-in-law when we were driving up the North Shore, and I know this story. I don't know how I have this story, but our Trickster's footprints are on the shore, and they're like, they were there, and in between Grand Marais and Grand Portage, and people from all over the world would come to see his footprints. And I was like, that's before, you know, Columbus came, was said to come here. And I'm like, how can people from all over the world hear about these footprints here? And there was, I mean, like 1491, 1492, that's kind of late in the game. Like, I'm pretty sure people had there's trade routes. I mean, we had copper, so, and I was, you know, digging deep into some Viking stuff too. So it's so crazy that you talked about that.
And yeah, and even though we're from Iowa, my dad is a huge Minnesota Vikings fan. So Vikings are always on my mind.
Are always on my mind. Oh my God. In some way or another.
When the Viking Stadium first opened, I was cart number two with six other people putting the stage together at the first halftime show, the first home game the Vikings played in the US Bank Stadium.
Wow.
And I only did that because my dad is a Vikings fan. Like, I could care less about football. But he was, like, so proud that I was there.
You made history,
I was
cart for him.
Number two.
That's awesome. It's such a huge stadium, too. I've only been in there, like, a couple times, but I'm like, this reminds me of, what is that, like Gladiator back, you know, mm-hmm. like, holy crap, this is crazy.
It's so huge and purple, so purple, which I love because at Haskell, our colors are purple and gold. So, yeah. Like, living here in Minnesota, everything is purple and gold.
Crosses still. Over me.
Yeah. Like, it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then there's another thing that we're going to have. The location is TBD, so you're going to have to find me on social media and hit me up if you're interested in coming. But for the Native folks, we want to have a master acting class with Gary Farmer.
Shut it.
Yes.
Gary, he's the naked guy in Reservation Dogs, by the way.
Yeah. And Powell Highway.
And he is naked in that one, too. Holy smokes.
He's on Resident Alien.
Dang,
yeah, and I think we should be getting a short film that he's done recently with Montana Cypress. And we'll screen that during this masterclass, which will be November 2nd, a Sunday, 11 to 2 p.m. So you can email me, oogiepush81@gmail.com. That's oogiepush81@gmail.com if you want more information on that. Or you can find me on social media. I'm on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and my YouTube. Check my YouTube. Oh, I got some documentaries up there already.
Are you on TikTok?
No. You know, I had TikTok for a while, a few years ago, but every time I opened up the app, my phone got really warm, like it was overworking, and it was like, it got so hot, it felt like my phone was going to explode. So, and then as soon as I uninstalled the TikTok app, it stopped doing that. So I don't know what TikTok was trying to do in my phone at the time, but it was working hard. And I was like, this is scary.
That's wild.
So I haven't been on TikTok since.
Yeah.
But I'm like the old person who watches the reels on Facebook 2 weeks late.
Well, sometimes I neglect my TikTok. I've been trying to get it going and like do different things and posts, but I am still old. There's a couple of features I know how to do, but I'm learning. I watch YouTubes. It's my jam. Well, in our last couple minutes, in what ways do you heal? I mean, our show is called Medicine Bundle, so it talks about, like, are we just uplift and highlight how Native people heal ourselves and heal our community and our family? What's your favorite? I mean, I think I figured it out, but we've been talking about it this whole time. But just to bring it home and tie it all together.
I love dancing. If there's live music or a DJ, I'll go out and dance. It really lifts my vibration, I feel. Of course, smudging. If the smudging's not working, I will write or do some art. And if that's not working, I will scream my face off for as long as I need to. And then I'll go outside and hug a tree.
Nice. That's Auntie Oogie's recipe for a bad day. Oh, and I will say that Oogie is, I was trying to dance last night and I'm like, I thought of Oogie and I'm like, she would be so embarrassed to me right now because it was like K-pop. And I'm like, dance. And I'm like, God, I'm so uncoordinated. But she is an amazing dancer. Super, like, even like hip hop, like different styles. So if you haven't seen Oogie dance, you're missing out. What's your favorite song to dance to?
It's Ozo Motley, Can't Stop.